the rest of the story. Nobody had suspected the infant's nursemaid was mentally unstable, nor had Grandpa nor Grandma imagined the girl was pregnant and desperate. Yet all the while she was caring for little Watty, who was not yet two, the nurse's mind was tormented with but one obsession. She must return home to Edinburgh, to her lover and to his arms. The only way to achieve this goal, she concluded insanely, was to be released from her nursemaid's duties by killing the child. It was then that the girl scooped up Watty, took him to a remote place on the moors, where, laying him gently on the heather, she removed from her pocket a pair of sharp scissors. It would be over soon, she comforted herself. A quick slit of the tiny throat, and his suffering, too, would be done. For indeed, at 18 months, an attack of infantile paralysis had cost Watty the use of his right leg, and the treatments of the times had proved painful and ineffectual. So his parents had sent him to Grandpa Robert's farm in hope that the fresh air would cure what the doctors could not. And that's how little Watty found his way to the moors that day, where the gleam of sunlight on the scissor blades captured his innocent gaze, and as the point drew nearer his chin, he still did not stir, but much to the nursemaid's astonishment, the child smiled. There's something in that loving and defenseless expression parted a curtain in the nursemaid's beleaguered brain. Suddenly, she was horrified and ashamed. She returned to Grandpa Robert. She confessed everything you've just learned. Perhaps it was Grandpa's joy over the averted tragedy that prompted the old Scotsman to show mercy, for the nurse was permitted to leave the farm and to pursue her own destiny. But this is the rest of the story. The recuperation of the little boy's lame leg was now completely in the hands of Grandpa and Grandma, but what were they to do? Folk remedies and well-meaning neighbors abounded in those parts. Try wrapping the child in sheepskin, somebody suggested. Drag a pocket watch along the floor and he'll crawl after it, offered another. And yet when it came right down to it, Grandpa and Grandma and their daughter, the baby's Aunt Janet, were proficient in only one therapeutic measure, and that was storytelling. So, to entertain and intrigue their young charge, even though it was doubtful that he could comprehend what he was being told, Grandpa would recount the exploits of adventurous ancestors. Grandma would bring to life the wild tales of the Scottish borderland. And then, as winter draped its gray shroud over the moors, Grandpa would sit by the hearth, Grandma at her spinning wheel, and Aunt Janet would read to little Watty the Ballad of Hardy Nuke. When the child was old enough to talk, he still remembered that story and could recite long passages from memory. As he grew, Watty's lame leg did improve, even enough to walk and eventually to run. But by then, the years of family storytelling had nurtured in him a passion for prose and poetry. In the annals of English literature, among the loftiest names, towers that of an author whose powerful six-foot frame emerged from the frail body of the child you've just met, the little boy who would have died an infant but for his innocent, engaging smile. But now you've seen the beginnings of a literary love affair which we all share with the author of The Lady of the Lake and The Lord of the Isles and Ivanhoe. Sir Walter Scott. Little Watty was Sir Walter Scott. And now you know the rest of the story.